Welcome to another episode of Sex in the Bull City, the podcast for Bull City Psychotherapy. I'm Celinde Malone, and I'm a clinician here at Bull City Psychotherapy. And with me today is Marcus. Tell us about you, Marcus.
Hello, all. I'm an intern here at Bull City Psychotherapy since back in the fall. We'll be here as an intern through the summer. And I'm finishing up my last year at North Carolina Central University, doing a master's of clinical mental health counseling.
Fantastic. Yeah. You'll be with us until the end of the summer in 2024,
yeah,
right?
At least. Yeah.
At least. And yeah. Maybe beyond.
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe beyond.
That's right.
Okay. I know I came from my internship here to working as an associate. So it's a good place to be. Today we are talking about kind of a difficult topic for some of the couples that we work with, especially couples who've experienced addiction and maybe betrayal trauma. That topic is forgiveness. And I know people get really strong opinions about forgiveness, and people feel a lot of pressure around forgiveness. People feel a lot of things when you talk about forgiveness.
Yeah.
And so I think starting with a little bit of our background like messages we heard about forgiveness when we were coming up. I know we both had religious backgrounds. And just talking a little bit about how you have viewed it in the past and whether it has changed, because it has for me. And so I think it's an interesting topic to discuss.
Yeah.
So what's your background?
Well, as has come up on the show before, you know, grew up in a Southern Baptist household. So fundamentalist evangelical kind of background. Read the heck out of my Bible. We were all up in the Bible all the time. And, you know, I think the messages around forgiveness are really strong throughout the New Testament, you know, in particular. It was really central, I think, to sort of Jesus's message in ministry. And so, yeah, I felt, you know, exposed to it a lot. And I think my sense growing up, well, generally forgiveness positive. Let's just say that. And I would say the narrative, I probably didn't understand it in this like sophisticated way when I was a kid, but maybe I felt it or intuited it, that forgiveness was sort of there was a fluidity of movement to it, which is to say it came to us from God endlessly. And therefore that is how it should be passed on. Okay. Endlessly, right?
Endlessly. So it's,
and there's sort of a famous, you know, saying of Jesus, it's, you know, where one of his disciples, or like one of the people, the masses or something, I can't remember who, asked him, you know, like, how many times should I forgive my brother? You know, and he said, 70 times 7, which didn't mean 490. It meant, you know, it meant like, you know, 77, these are like perfect numbers. It meant like infinity. Forgive your brother infinity times, you know.
Stop counting.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Stop counting. That's a good way, succinct way to put it.
I came up in a very similar environment where that was a very central message. It was a central value for the people that were important in my life, that no matter how you're treated, no matter what you go through, forgiveness was important. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this today, it actually came up in a recent group discussion with an activity I was doing with my church. And we talked about forgiveness, and I realized my views have changed. My understanding of forgiveness. And in the group, they were drawing the parallel between, or drawing the distinction between emotional forgiveness, like the internal sense of not holding it against somebody, like not feeling negative emotions toward a person. Mm-hmm. And the decisional forgiveness, like I choose not to hold a thing against you.
Mm-hmm. That's helpful.
And that even though the emotional part might not come real quickly, the decisional part was important. Mm. And that had me sit for a long time with the concept of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. You know, I think for our clients, where I see this coming up, partners who have addiction, partners who have gone through infidelity in their relationship, places that the things that they're dealing with on a personal level have impacted the people around them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how those people are responding. I have my own ideas now about the importance of forgiveness and occasionally the dangers of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to make the distinction between seeking vengeance, mm-hmm. or not seeking vengeance as a form of forgiveness, and allowing yourself to remain in a situation that is harmful as a form of forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that the important thing is to do what is best for your own internal sense mm-hmm. of self.
Yeah. You know, it's probably come up in other episodes before, but I find it such a helpful kind of lens to see a lot of things through in ways that I think are just very, like, realistic and grounded, but like a harm reduction lens, you know, basically says, like, what can we do in a situation? And it's in some ways it's a value, right? It's a value to reduce the harm, and mm-hmm. and that reducing harm is an invaluable first step, maybe on the path towards healing. And so I think harm reduction is an interesting lens to bring to this.
Okay.
And also just like, what are the real demands of the work of healing, you know, require of us?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, my sense, you know, with where you're coming from, with some of what you're reacting to, I think rightfully so, is that in a way, what the work of healing demands is not taken seriously. Mm-hmm. And is kind of, in a lot of contexts, it's short-circuited or kind of leaped over, you know.
Minimized at best.
Mm-hmm, right. In ways that it's just like, well, just forgive. There's this sense of like, the power of love overcomes these limitations, mm-hmm. you know. And that doesn't require you to go through the kind of process that is just intrinsic to healing mm-hmm. and
restoration is the word that comes up for me.
Yeah. And that this process has certain requirements. It has costs, you know, mm-hmm. I think cost is another way, you mm-hmm. know, that, in a way that it really sits in tension with Jesus's words, because Jesus is like, infinite times, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of, I think kind of what we're saying is just like, well, you know, like that there should be limits because we're limited people. Mm-hmm. We are limited people. We have limited bandwidth. You know, there's, I think sometimes a spirituality says, spiritual perspective sometimes say like there's an endlessness to the love that we can give. But, you know, what we find in our finite little creaturely bodies, you know, and its needs for a very, again, sort of realistic healing, you know, that does count the costs, is that, yeah, we have to work with limitations.
I think working with limitations brings up another aspect of this for me, that I'm going to call it weaponized forgiveness. The person who has caused the harm will guilt the person who has been harmed. Well, you want to be a forgiving person, right?
Yeah.
And we'll draw, go back to that, you know, drawing on that repeatedly until there's nothing left to give. And where I'm coming from is that that person who has been harmed needs to be able to say, no, I'm not going to pretend like it didn't happen. I'm not going to continue to subject myself to the ongoing nature of this. I'm setting limits for myself. And if you don't have that, if you don't have that ability, is it really forgiveness?
Yeah.
You know, I think for somebody who especially has been in addiction, learning to sit with hard emotions is one of the biggest and first challenges. And having somebody that you care about be angry with you feels bad. Or somebody that you've hurt feels their feelings in front of you. That feels bad. And so I understand that pressure to just get over it. Just get over it. I can't take this anymore. I can't take any more of your hard feelings. It makes me feel bad, and it's just, I'm going to act out again because I feel bad. And that's part of the work in restoring that relationship. You know, you're talking about you got to do the hard work. If you're going to restore that relationship, part of that work is sitting with your own discomfort and not expecting forgiveness, especially not expecting forgiveness immediately. Or quickly, or on your timeline.
Yep.
You have to be able to acknowledge that you've put that hurt out there. And so from the other side, the person who has been harmed, I do think that there is some value. You know, we hear people say things like, forgiveness is for you, not for the other person.
Right.
Right. And I do think that the distinction I made earlier about vengeance, holding vengeance against somebody, wanting revenge, wanting to see them experience harm or negative consequences can be damaging to you as a person because it can become consuming. And letting, being able to set that down, I think is healthy. But I do think continuing to hold your boundaries and set a place that you can be safe, saying no, not rushing forgiveness, not rushing restoration, I think that's appropriate and healthy. And I know that's kind of a hot take in the, even in the mental health world, that forgiveness is not always the right idea. But I'm saying that.
I really hear you. I think, I wonder if it's helpful almost to break forgiveness up into almost like two movements that where one doesn't need to follow the other. I think of, one way to give language to this is, and this is like a really big example, but like I think it has relevance for, very small interpersonal interactions. But like, in the wake of, post-apartheid South Africa, you had, well, it was initiated by the movement, sort of built and headed by Nelson Mandela, the Truth and Reconciliation Ministry, I think it was called, or the Ministry of Truth and Reconciliation, something like that. But I kind of love the labels here. There's like, first and foremost, the full truth of what was done, the hurt that was caused, the costs of that wounding are sort of really owned and fessed up to. And so, like, here's the first movement, And we see this in recovery culture, in a very similar way, right? It's just like sort of maybe disclosure, a full, like, this is everything that I've done, a sort of full accounting for all the ways that your addiction has made you hurt yourself and others.
Common with betrayal trauma,
Yeah,
one of the important steps.
And so there's that, right? And there's a full taking of accountability. Let's just speak the whole truth of it. And it feels like that is enough of a that is a piece unto itself of forgiveness. And it's where forgiveness can stop. And it may be to your point that it's just like, let's tell the whole truth and own it, And then, and maybe there's even another piece, there's repair that can be, you can, the person who has done the wounding, the person who's done the hurting, can take responsibility for doing work of repair to try to restore in some way, even if symbolically, what has been, taken away, what has been damaged. And then, so there's telling the truth, there's responsibility for repair, and maybe even those two pieces can be separated from a third piece, which is telling the truth and working for repair sort of sufficient for the restoration of a relationship, And the answer has to be open, yes or no, whether there will be a, whether that owning it and even working for restoration then justifies the restoration of relationship. And like we're saying, there should be kind of freedom there and not a sense that this process is unilaterally leads to a necessary restoration of relationship. And I wonder if that kind of breaking it up into different pieces kind of helps, because it seems like the first piece is like absolutely essential, But I mean, people don't always get on board. Like you said, people aren't willing or seemingly, able. It's like they don't have the strength of self, to be able to own what they've done without collapsing in on themselves and shame, without lashing out in defensive, tactics of all sorts, that are reactions often that they don't even feel like they're choosing, right? It's sort of the flailings of a wild animal in trauma response sometimes,
And, I have a lot of empathy for people who are kind of in that cycle of being unable to own their actions and live up to it because those things represent their own attachment wounding. But what I
Absolutely.
want to be very clear about, and I hope our listeners hear, is that it is not the responsibility of the harmed party to fix that attachment wound in the person that harmed them. That's what professionals are for. That's work that that person needs to do. And that is not a place that a wife needs to say to her cheating husband.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, you know, if I just keep showing up for you, you will get better.
Mm-hmm.
If I just keep forgiving you, this won't be a problem anymore. There is no mm-hmm. magic number that fixes people. Yeah. And I think that distinction doesn't get made enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think empathy for the person who creates the wrong
mm-hmm.
needs to be from afar.
Mm.
If you are the person who has been harmed, you can have empathy for them. But there needs to be a boundary there. You will not get to continue to create this harm in my life.
Yeah.
And I have honestly never heard anybody talk about that before.
Well, hmm. Yeah.
You know, we make forgiveness out to be this magical,
mm-hmm.
it'll fix everything.
Yeah.
And that's not reality.
Yeah. It almost feels like, I'm trying to think of some mm-hmm. analogy for this, it's like there's this bridge between us, you know, between mm-hmm. two people that some kind of betrayal, some kind of hurt, something that stands in need of repair, and this kind of process of forgiveness causes. And then this really solid bridge is kind of really destroyed. It's harmed. This mm-hmm. the connection is broken and has to be rebuilt. And that takes time. But it seems like, I don't know, maybe people that are in committed relationships are like, all right, we're going to kind of throw this makeshift rope bridge over it. And like, so that allows us to keep connecting, but it's like, but it's not the same as rebuilding trust. I guess I am struggling. I'm like, well, it's like, because I think there's damage just happens in close relationships so often,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I guess maybe trying to stick with my analogy a little bit. It's like, we're always doing maintenance. We're always trying to repair the bridge. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's just that when like really catastrophic damage happens,
mm-hmm.
it's like, I don't know, maybe to your point, it's like really accepting like, no, there's going to be a breakage in mm-hmm. our connection for a while mm-hmm. we're rebuilding this. And maybe the kind of the rope bridge of forgiveness. It's like, well, we're going to kind of skip over so that we can keep this thing mm-hmm. going. That's like, I don't know, maybe a limitation that we have to accept.
You know, to stick with your analogy, which I appreciate, I use the analogy of a bridge all the time
mm-hmm.
with relationships. You know, I think the harmed party in that so often is the person who is expected to do the rebuilding.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
And it's the person who caused the harm
mm-hmm.
that needs to take the majority of that.
Yeah.
Not necessarily all of it, because
and
most frequently,
mm-hmm.
people who experience
mm-hmm.
Betrayal trauma or other marriage or mm-hmm. relationship wounding,
mm-hmm.
there's other stuff happening too. Like mm-hmm. there are problems on both sides.
Yeah.
Not always, but sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so is there work for both people to do? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But the person who is causing the biggest harm needs to take the biggest part of the rebuilding work.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably what's happening, right? If, like, in these situations, is that this person ended up doing something really damaging to the relationship because because they're in some ways weak, they're in some ways like in some compromised sense of being able to meet their own needs, right? And so is that what's happening then, where it's just like then the work of repair comes and this person is just like, oh, I did this because I was not in a good place. Now I'm in a worse place, and you're asking me to work on rebuilding the bridge, you know? It's like you're the one with the strength right now, like the person that has been wronged, you know? And I think through that prism, it's like, again, like when you who has the capacity to do the work, so to speak, and then like, but in terms of the kinds of, I think, justice, the way that we're framing it, like who is responsible for the work, though, you know? I don't know. I think that's a real tension, right?
Well, I also want to challenge the idea that the person who has been harmed is necessarily the stronger party. Because brain research has shown us that, let's take the example of betrayal through infidelity. Brain research has shown us that that is every bit as traumatic. Like the brain reacts in the same trauma response as if you got into a car accident, or you had some thing that fits our DSM criteria for traumatic event. That very rapid destruction of foundation. Like you saw your life one way. I am connected to this person. We are building this life together. We are, I trust this person with all of the important things in my life. We might have kids together. We have, all of these different things. And to have that shifted out from underneath you, and now you're questioning everything that has happened. Like, how real was my foundation? Has everything been a lie? What's really real here? That process is traumatic, and it leaves that person unable to do the work of repair. They have repair that they need to do within themselves.
And in so often in codependent dynamics, which is really a lot of what we're talking about here, right? It's sort of, I feel like I've noticed it's ironically the person with the power in the relationship is also the one who is perceived as needy and weak, right? The person with the problem, let's say the addiction or something like that. They exercise in that position power over the other person to require them to do so much work to support them. So it's this, I think that's part of naming that ironic tension of like, oh, I'm so weak and needy in these ways. And it's like, so you need to be doing all the work. And it's kind of, to your point, it's regardless of capacity, really, right?
And again, this is why I have empathy for people in that situation, because most often that comes from a very deep place of wounding and need for healing. And I love working with people who are in this process of how do I even begin to climb out? How do I begin to restore this relationship? But I think starting with the reality that it is their work to do, as opposed to just tell your partner to get over it.
That's right. And that's empowering. You're empowering them. Like, you need to do the work for yourself. And the power that you've been using sort of over your partner is that is damaging, you know?
Exactly. I think the reason I wanted to do this podcast today, I want to hear more people talking about forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of it being a simple process. I want to hear people talk about the work.
The work, right? The specifics of how it works, you know? Because when it's just kind of blanket, posited as a blanket value, you know, just where it's just like, just do it, you know? Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, it's like, how? How does it actually work, you know? You're right. We need to understand the mechanics of it better, so to speak.
And take away the stigma of people who are having a hard time forgiving. Maybe they even want to. Maybe they were, you know, have a background like ours, and they have that as a value for themselves.
Yeah.
I think it's a disservice to them to stigmatize that. That's a really hard thing to do. And this sense of entitlement that some people have to forgiveness is abusive.
Absolutely. I feel like there's, in recent years especially, a real sort of boom, and I think this is oftentimes tied to mindfulness, in kind of the language of compassion. And I wonder if it's a helpful kind of alternative to forgiveness in a sense, because where forgiveness is both like, it's like this, it's a value, it's a feeling, and it's a process, it's a goal, it's all these kinds of things. It seems like compassion is something that can be exercised with relative immediacy, and it doesn't imply this, like, as this chain of like necessities. There's kind of a freedom to compassion that's just like, I can try to understand the person across from me. I can sort of extend to them like just a spirit of kindness, you know? And, but it's just that. It's just that in the moment. It doesn't imply a necessity for me to do all these things.
It doesn't require that you continue to place yourself in harm.
I wonder if that's kind of a helpful, you know, like, yes, let's have the both a value and a practice of compassion that isn't locked into this unspoken chain of things that I have to do and that aren't really considered.
Yeah. I think that's a great point, that shifting the conversation from forgiveness to compassion. And not putting a timeline on the compassion. And I will say that because you're not going to necessarily feel compassionate towards someone who's harmed you.
Right.
You know, I think the people that I've seen who are the most healed have gone through the stages of anger, you know, self, like, defending themselves.
That's right.
Acceptance, and then sometimes years down the road, there's a sense of, I still see that person as a person. I acknowledge that they had their own stuff, and they will never do that to me again. Just acknowledging that the other person had stuff. And that they weren't at a place that they could treat you the way that you deserve to be treated.
And maybe to your point, it's compassion for another is maybe ultimately secondary, and that self-compassion is the starting place.
Oh, I love that.
And self-compassion is our teacher for maybe how to extend compassion to other people, you know? And I love that too. It's that, you know, a healthy expression of self-compassion sometimes is anger, It's like, because I love and care about myself,
yes,
I'm angry that someone hurt me.
Beautiful.
You know? Yeah. I think that's really true. That's the starting place.
Start with self-compassion. Mm-hmm. Maybe someday compassion for the other person.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think that's really life wisdom right there. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts for us?
I think on that last note of self-compassion, mm-hmm. it's I think a frontier I've noted for myself is trying to extend compassion to versions of myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you know, we started this, you know, talking about our place in fundamentalist, you know, evangelical Christianity. Mm-hmm. And it is interesting to think of healing work that I have to do as like learning to in some ways reconnect with the like little evangelical Marcus,
mm-hmm.
you know, who's still kind of rattling around in there, and like to show him compassion. And I think that's a wonderful starting place for, I don't know, I think responding to what I have recognized as the enduring bitterness and resentment I have towards fundamentalist evangelical Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do want to have compassion for as many people as I can,
mm-hmm.
you know, I really do. And, so that's something I've been thinking of lately. And I think maybe along the lines of forgiveness, it's like, I do think when we carry bitterness and resentment, we carry it. It's a weight.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weight, you know, and therefore forgiveness, it's back to that. There is self-interest there. It's like, I don't mm-hmm. want to carry this weight anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's something I've been thinking about a little bit.
My final thoughts are just about the role of therapy in this process, the work of forgiveness.
Mm.
You know, I have come to feel that therapy, first and foremost, is about holding space for our clients. Do we teach skills? Of course. Do we help strategize and, you know, use our training to find new outcomes for people? Of course.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing that we do is hold space for whatever someone is going through. And if you, as a listener, are going through something that you're feeling pressure to forgive, mm-hmm. you're feeling somewhere in the process, maybe you're struggling with that first piece of self-compassion, maybe you are just feeling chaotic about how do I even begin to climb out of this harm that was done to me,
mm-hmm.
or on the other side, you've done harm and how on earth do you not live in shame? How do you forgive yourself? How do you find acceptance and healing? What work do you need to do? We hold space for that here. That's our, it's not just our job, it's our passion. It's the thing that we enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And I encourage you to reach out. We're on the web.
Mm-hmm.
We especially work with sex, gender. Marcus and I know, work with religious trauma. We have people who work with eating disorders, addiction, betrayal trauma. And so this is just an invitation to you. Reach out to us and we'll hold space for you. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks all.